Congress to require patents to be examined before they were granted, and the necessary facilities for doing that and staffing it were provided by Congress. So July 4th is the birthday of our country. It's the birthday of an ideal, which America is as much an ideal as it is a country. And it's also the anniversary of American innovation in the modern sense. So consider that as well. So take care, everybody, and God bless. And thank the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater. And good DX, and be safe over the next couple of days. KTBARW2TTT, off and clear. Thank you.
Hey, Gordon, if you're still there.
Yeah, I'm here.
It's KD2GNY. How much current do your Atom machines draw, the 12-volt ones?
Not much. I mean, I'm running jetways, so they're a little more demanding than some. I'm going to say, with a monitor and all sorts of other mixer guys hanging off of it, less than an amp.
That's pretty good. I'm running, it's a AMD APU, so it's a video card, quad-core processor, all-in-one with a micro ATX motherboard here, a solid-state hard drive. Without the monitor, it draws idle about 45 watts, and with monitor, off idle, it's probably about 100 watts. So, I'm not too far off.
Oh, no. No, not at all. Actually, you know what? I can't do it right now, but I will make a point of letting you know that, Brad. Either shoot me a note on email to remind me, or join the contact group, and I'll put it up there. That's a really good question. I also have been using USB displays where possible. Unfortunately, I only have one of them now, because all the others have been farmed out to other people, but I have 17-inch, 50s, I forget whether they're USB displays, so that's really slick. Although the Jetway boards I use have on board a capacity for both a VGA and an HDMI port, so there's lots and lots of video options. I also have 17-inch, no, bigger than that. That's some large format 12-volt HP monitors that I use, and they're delightful. They're a little big, but the other ones, the one remaining USB monitor that I have is very good. And what my intention is to, I kind of alluded to it before, I have two of these Atom processors kicking around, and I'm going to take those and run two Flex 1500s on them with a display each, and then I have transverters for the higher bands, 2, 222, 432, 903, 1296, and if I can find it, 2304. And the first three use 28 or 30 megahertz IFs, and the upper three use 144 that's built into my switch box. It's a low-level transverter for 2 meters. So I'm basically going to build myself up a really slick box that you show up with two keyboards, and you have your station, your QRP portable station for contesting and hilltopping, with two lovely displays and two nice wireless keyboards and perhaps a nice trackball that I haven't decided yet, and run the Flexes on those. And then separately, I'll have a laptop running the Flex 5000 on 6 meters if I really want to have a direct 6 meter thing. I'll just crank it down to 10 watts for QRP portable. But the idea is to have, you know, a really slick level of automation, all SDR through 1296 or 2304 to all the VHF and HF fans.
Very cool.
Yeah, I mean, the in all honesty, you know, there's you're only scanning 48 kilohertz of bandwidth on with the Plex 1500s, the little ones, and they run on USBs, and that's plenty of horsepower to run most digital modes, logging, and still, you know, handle the, you know, the SDR functionality. Although I'll experiment with that before I commit to it. Worst case is I'll upgrade the CPU boards to something like what you have, maybe a little less, but yeah, the Atom processors are disgustingly light. I've got 4 gigs of RAM in each one. You can look them up. Jetway NF9Ds, November Foxtrot 9 Delta, and I've got at least one or two 2700s, and then Intel decided to not produce the 2700 processor anymore. They went down to a 2550 because they couldn't get a good yield on the silicon. But my 2700s are flawless, so I'm good that way. But that's what I've got. And the marginal difference between a 2.7 versus a 2.55 is negligible.
Does anybody else want to jump in here before I ask another question?
I've got a quick question for Gordon.
Go ahead.
Hey, Gordon, WACQBC. Just a quick question. I wonder, I've been getting double emails from the ComTech group. Is there a chance that you subscribe me in addition to me subscribing me?
That's possible. Why don't you try unsubscribing and see what happens?
Okay, I'll give that a shot. They're coming through slightly differently because my filters are working differently on the computer. But I'll try unsubscribing and see what happens. Thanks, Gordon. W2PPP.
Yeah, I mean, if it's the same ID, there should only be one subscription.
I've just been getting double emails. I'm just wondering.
Yeah, I'm not sure why.
No worries. I'll try to figure it out.
Yeah, very good. No problem, Bruce. Yeah. But are you finding the list modestly useful?
One or two nuggets every once in a while. It's just good to keep track of a few things. I'm trying to sort out my filters right now.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's a product of your filtering. I've seen that where somehow things get replicated and double filed because of people's rule base.
I'll take a look at the message headers and see if there's a difference and make sure it's actually double messages coming through.
Yeah, probably a good start. Very, very good start. Alrighty. That's good to know. W2QBC, W2TTT. Alrighty. Mr. Greg, you had something else?
One.
Yeah, we just doubled. Greg, Brad.
W2TTT, KD2GMY. Alright, I got a question for you. Ready?
Sure.
Alright, so I got this nifty SDR I bought. It's actually Israeli of all companies. It's one of the Alfredis. It actually is pretty amazing. Over Ethernet or USB, it has two different operating bandwidths. Over the Ethernet, it's over 1.8 meg wide bandwidth that it can look at one time. And USB is something like 200 or 300 kilohertz at a time. It's actually fairly decent receive and I'd say as far as sensitivity and dynamic range goes. I'd almost compare it to my 590 that I have here, my Kenwood PS590. But I've got an issue I want to try to figure out maybe with setting up a receive antenna.
Okay. Do you want to get on 40 meters or something?
No, it's not an issue of getting on the band. I've got two antennas and I want to use primarily my horizontal, my Wyndham with it, because that has additional gain that, or if I were to split it, I could afford to lose a little bit of gain. I'd still have enough power to listen on it. And what I want to do is I really want to split the receive of that, send the receive to both the SDR and the 590, but when I transmit, I need to isolate the SDR from the output of the 590, so that way I don't blow its brains out.
Okay, so I'm just looking at the Freddy homepage here. Couple of things come to mind. Depending on how it's built, you could tap into the receive side of the TR relay in the in the 590, and then bring that out through a broadband isolation over to the SDR. You know, maybe even do a high Z tap just to bring it out. The other approach is do a high Z tap, ahead of its SDR, but after the RF gain stages and filtering in the front of the radio. Is there such a tapping point in the 590?
I haven't played with it yet. I wasn't actually ready to crack open the 590 as a solution. I was actually hoping to do it externally. One of the ideas I had thought about playing with was something like one of those MFJ transmit receive switches where one antenna input, a transmit and a receive connection, and you listen on one device, transmit on the other. What would happen though is I wouldn't be able to hear anymore on my 590 along with the SDR. And actually what I wind up doing is with the SDR console I have, if I tune or change a mode in the 590, it changes that on the SDR. And it's reciprocal. If I change the setting or tuning or something like that on the SDR, it talks to the 590 and they sync up with each other. So ideally, if I want to use the SDR as a fish finder and then listen and talk on the 590, I can't. I have to keep moving the antenna back and forth.
Okay, so all I did was look up, I did TS590, and what was the other search key I put in? Hold on, it was ridiculously simple. TS590 external SDR. And I got a couple of things. One is receiver out adapter cable, and then how to connect a Kenwood TS590S to SDR-IQ. But the adapter cable thing is a little bit, let's see what the project is. you get the, you download the in-depth manual. Someone found a way to bring a micro, sized piece of coax out through an existing hole between the bottom cover and the side and the back panel with a BNC pigtail to drive your SDR receiver. And let's see, what did they do on the inside of the radio? A ring connector on the shield, and they just unplugged something that was in the radio and stuck a pin inside it and essentially brought it around. It's a nice little adapter. It fits in an Altoids can, and includes a buffer preamp with about 40 dB of isolation. Rather clever. And it doesn't require that you maim your radio. It just requires that you unplug things inside your radio and bring those cables out to a little Altoids can that provides your functionality, and away you go.
Yeah, I saw that. It wasn't really super ideal. I mean, if I had to, I could, but I had looked at a couple solutions, and I might even think about doing something where I take that. I was trying to do it outside the box first. I didn't feel like cutting this thing at the moment, but take that transmit switch that senses transit power and then has a delay before it goes back to the receiver, and actually split, because I have to split the receiver no matter what. So I'm losing 3 dB no matter how you see it, if you're going to be listening in two places. So I hit reality and that's fine. But I was thinking about taking the receive connection, splitting it, sending one to the SDR, and then converting it to RCA and going into the receive antenna input on my 590, and I would be able to receive on that, but transit on the actual UHF connector.
I mean, I'm looking at the other thing where it talks about interfacing to SDR IQ, That's exactly what they do. They have the, they use the receive antenna port on the 590 to feed the SDRIQ, and then they run a second, that they have a three relay box there to just bring things in. It's pretty straightforward. You'll need three coaxial relays. Actually, is that true? No, you need maybe one coaxial relay, two coaxial relays, I guess. Two coaxial relays and an an audio relay. So, but you can use small ones. You can use, you can find them, little tiny BNC Dow keys, or what the hell is the Japanese manufacturer, I'm trying to remember now, but they make small precision, either SMA or, so in this case, BNC relays, and yeah, that would be real easy to do. Because basically what you do is you bring your antenna in on onto the relay common and feed that over to both the SDR and to the 590, and then but you don't even have to bring it over to the 590 if you don't want to, and then unless you really want to have it as more than a fish finder, I mean, you might as well just receive on the SDR and just zero beat the 590's transmitter. Yeah, I mean the SDR, I mean, it's for $200-something. It's scary how good it receives, and it's very well featured. It's been very reliable. It's on for days straight and doesn't have any hiccups. And over Ethernet, I can actually connect to it on any computer in my house and listen. So it winds up being a pretty slick package, and I actually highly recommend it if somebody's looking for like a receive only one, something to fuss around with. But yeah, I'm probably gonna wind up doing something where it's a transit isolate switch up front, and then go into it, and then go into the receive port on the Kenwood. And again, the Kenwood, usually what winds up happening is it's got a speaker hooked up to it, so I can hear. I don't have to have headphones on, and it also winds up having a little bit better. Well, I don't want to say a little bit better, noise cancellation, but it's different than what's on the SDR, and the SDR offers about four different kinds of noise cancellation, and sometimes the Kenwood does a better job with it, and it's, you know, the DSP that it has in it, and it's noise reduction one state. So I don't know, I really kind of would like to hear on both, and if I don't want to use the SDR, I don't have to change any wires, you know, it's always hooked up to work both ways. Well, the ELAD, you know, module, and I would think it would work with what you have, is you're looking for SD, you know, it's basically, he was using it with the RF space SDRIQ box, runs the same, so I gotta believe that you should be, you could buy the ELAD switch box, and do exactly what you're talking about without having to, you know, do anything more than create patch cables on the outside of your radio. I think that's what you may want to consider doing.
Yeah, I mean, at HF frequencies, I mean, a couple of cables here and there, you're not going to notice the difference at all, so I'd rather do it outside. That way, if I got to change something or change it in the future, it's you know, temporary versus permanent.
Well, how to connect the Kenwood TS590S to an SDRIQ receiver? That's what you want to look up, and you will see, or look up SDR and TS590 and Golf 3 November Romeo Whiskey, G3NRW. You'll get a nice little article, and there's probably a lead on where to go buy that box.
What is the call sign again?
Golf 3 November Romeo Whiskey. A couple of articles here on that. I mean, I started out with the search of simply, you know, TS590 external SDR, and you'll see a couple of things. The first article is a PDF, and if you scroll down a little further, you'll see a couple other things from him that will be rather delightful. it will bring you to that Thomas Land.
Yeah, the idea I kind of got was a simplified version of another idea I saw on DX Engineering's website. They've got a box. That basically what it does is it's supposed to give you a receive antenna input if you don't have one, and it winds up having a main antenna output, a main antenna input, isolation between transit and everything. And it does a little bit more than I need, but if you go to their website, look at their transit, their receive box that adds a receive antenna input in, their figure 10 there basically shows what I was thinking about, doing a split output, isolate the transmit, but that's a whole other conversation. That's a big manual they got there for that, but I'll figure something out. But I just like how well integrated it is, where I can actually drive one or the other, and they drive each other. That way they're tuning together and stepping with each other, and it winds up being a poor man's flex or something like that,
That's why I have Flex 1500, just for that reason. I mean, a dirty little secret here, in all full disclosure, my employer has bought a few of these Flex boxes for work-related projects that I've been on for a couple of years. I mean, it's one of my many projects, and so I was able to get those. But I think the advantage rather than the DX Engineering is it's got everything is functional through the USB to make the PPT work properly, to make the audio work properly, to drive decoding through the SDR if you want to decode through the SDR versus through a computer interface that's attached to your 590, but you can do both at the same time. There's some nice things here. So, I'm not totally up on what he's doing here, but I'm getting the impression that this is a really good thought-through interface. So you might want to give this a look. It has how to connect up the hardware, the software. I mean, he's even recommending a box called an ELAD, E-L-A-D, the ELAD switch box. In fact, let me see if I can go find who sells that while we're chatting here, because that's a really interesting idea. I mean, I built more complicated things for there's a schematic for it that someone's published online. Yeah, you can buy it. It's a thing you can buy on EHAM, or not, it's referenced on EHAM, I should say. So it's a real product.
Yeah, but I might have seen this post. What does EHAM have that thing for a rating, though?
Let me see. It was complaining about the enough RF rejection on the receive pass, so he connected a switch box antenna connector to protect his FT1000MP receive out, and the switch box receive connector via a splitter, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so the guy then updated it. Let's see, what else? Hold on. No, he didn't like this at all. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, actually, there's four reviews. One guy did three of them, and each one was successively more in the trash. Well, actually, it looks like, he didn't like the ELAD in the end, so maybe that's not such a great idea, but there is a schematic. So you can type ELAD, hold on, what did I put on here? I did see schematic, and, you can, again, with some good, good relays, you can pretty much duplicate what you want. I mean, someone used this with a Perseus receiver and a 57D, so there's a lot of people have used different things, but apparently there's a schematic diagram around there. Let me see if I can find it.
Yeah, it's no big deal. My initial attempt is going to be probably like an MFJ 1708 transmit receive isolation switch, and then a 1-2 splitter, and then some cables, and see how that goes, and see if that offers me enough isolation. That'd be my off the shelf approach. And if that doesn't work, I'll modify that stuff with whatever is required, whether it be more isolation or whatnot. But that's my off the shelf initial go in as far as what I think I'm going to try to do.
But take a look at the ELAD schematic, and no matter what you use to replace the ELAD itself, then I think you're in good shape. ELAD also makes an SDR of their own, but the point I'm trying to make is that the general connectivity is what you want to take a look at. You want to bring your HF antenna into the switch box and then have it enabled or disabled to go directly to the transceiver or to go to the SDR receiver. If you want to have a tapping receiver, as opposed to one that continuously shows it, then you're really going to have to go like the other system had, where you're going to go into the go in there and on the receive input to the 590, have some sort of buffered amplifier. You're really going to need to do that. And even then, you're going to have to protect the SDR receiver on transmit, unless you want to keep it alive. I mean, you keep it live. But even then, you're going to have to shield the hell out of it to keep things neat and clean. There's a lot of stuff to consider when you're doing what you're trying to do.
82, BNY. Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting. And if you take a look at the MFJ 1708, it's basically what you're describing there externally. And I had to go take a look and see if they offer up what the isolation is port to port at HF frequencies. But that's going to be the question: is that going to give me the isolation? If it doesn't look like it will, then my whole idea is out the window.
What was the MFJ model again?
1708, I think.
And by a quick look. They have such a thing, don't they? Let's see what it's all about. RF sensing TR switch?
Roger, that's it.
Yeah, okay. I'm not so sure that it's going to be Mr. Wonderful when it comes to isolation.
Especially the proximity of the ports. It might be one of those things when I call them or whatnot and see if they have an actual number. You know, if it winds up being, let's say, I think 100 watts, so that's plus 50. And I need to come down to at least no more than plus 13 in on that thing. So if it had 40 to 50 dB of isolation, at least 40, it wouldn't blow the front end out of it.
Yeah, and I understand.
I don't expect it to attenuate it down to nothing, but I just don't want to smoke the front end on it, and I know it can't handle more than plus 13, so if they could say, 40 plus dB of isolation minimum, that would be enough to, save that thing bacon and not set it on fire every time I transmit.
So, why don't you build yourself a power divider, 50 ohm port power divider, the simple Wilkinson style. That should, you can probably build it using ferrite. Get some decent, you probably should be able to get at least 40 dB of isolation without too much trouble, but I'll be real honest. On your SDR, what I would do, I would switch it to a 50 ohm ground through a coaxial relay, and I would make sure that that 50 ohm ground was shielded, you know, almost like a dummy load, and that's what I would terminate my SDR receiver in when the HF transceiver is transmitting.
Well, that's actually how they describe how the 1708 works, is it terminates the receive to ground when the transmitter is transmitting. And then it's got a delay that you can set from when it senses transmitting a ceased force, which is back over to the receiver.
But what is its response time?
I think it was 25 milliseconds, but again, I actually don't have any of my computers up yet because we lost power and whatnot, but I think it was around 25 milliseconds.
That's a long time in the life of a front end.
Yeah, but I bet you, I mean, there's got to be some sort of delay in this receiver here, especially if you're working with an external, you know, amplifier to delay transmit after PTC is pushed. Wouldn't you think so?
Maybe. Let me see what it says here. I'm looking at this. This prevents your antenna from switching between dots and dashes or syllables, or between syllables or words. Maybe. I don't know. What most people do, just for your reference, when they want to protect the front end, and let's say you have a remote preamp on, let's say a VHF or UHF or microwave station. There's the TR relay, and then off of the TR relay, in the receiver chain, you have a second relay that switches from the receive input from the TR relay, and before it goes into the front end, it switches either to the TR relay or to a separate, dummy load, if you will, you know, something highly shielded. So you're essentially using the isolation from two sets of relays, or two relay contact sets, and that's why I was thinking, you know, some good high frequency relays would be, you know, advised here, along with, something like a 1 or 5 or even 10 watt, but really high, high level shielded dummy load that, you know, plugs in on SMA or BSC that you can put on that relay to really, you know, give this thing a 50 ohm load that goes nowhere in the real world.
Yep. Basically, I'm going to try it without, and then if it looks like the isolation's crap, I'll take another relay and slap it in, and have the
Kenwood when it would go to drive a solid state amplifier or a tube amplifier, and enable it. There's usually like an output for that, I'm sure, on this device.
Again, I don't have an amp, so I really haven't looked at that interface yet on this 590, but there's got to be some sort of output to enable an amplifier downstream, and that would be what you probably want to do to drive that other relay, I would imagine.
Yeah, I'm going through my relays here to see what's handy. I know this isn't all of them, that's all I know. I have a... These are larger relays than I would have wanted to use here, but I have a really, really nice HP relay that's good from DC to 18 gigs. It's actually, they call it an RF switch, but fundamentally it's a relay. And this thing is the cat's meow in a word. 12 to 15 volts to switch it, and it's got a male BNC on one side, N on one side and two female N's on the other. It's a model 8761 alpha. I got a couple of Transco relays here, which are kind of big. These are 28, one's a 28 volter, all female N's. Two of those, I'm assuming the second one is also a a 28 volter. And I got some other piece of garbage here. I got a bunch of the 28 volt one. I mean the little guys. I don't know where they are. BNC relays, and I don't see any of them around, which is a little disturbing. Which means they're in another drawer, God knows where, somewhere else.
82 GNY. Yeah, no. That's all right, man. I'm not in a rush. I'm pretty happy just working with the way I have it right now, where I kind of use it as a fish finder, then move the cable over to the 590, and then, you know, mark a couple of good frequencies down or pause the screen and then just whatnot. And sometimes, especially when you're looking at, like, the, you know, I guess 21 and 28-meter band, they're huge, so sometimes thumbing through them, you miss stuff where your thumb goes numb before you wind up finding what's there, or, you know, 160 meters too, that's a couple hundred kilohertz wide. It just helps out a little bit, especially if you're just starting out for the night and you just want to say, all right, which bands are cranking here, and I'll go focus on those.
Yeah, sure. Well, if it's any comfort, I run 6 meters on my 590 every day, all day, and I run it, let's see, how much, I guess I'm running around 80 kilohertz, 90 kilohertz right now, mode. It's not quite as wide as you might think, but I'm seeing some signals here, see, trying to line them up. There we go, there's the local beacon, and some other beacons here too, but, you know, there's a little activity tonight, even now, there's a little, you know, remote activity, you see it popping up every so often, it's kind of neat, but, your, as you call it, fish finder mode is good, but I do it continuously. And what I really like is I tune the receiver with my thumb wheel on my mouse for, you know, I click a point and click and then do the fine tuning with the mouse wheel. Once you do that, you either go back to a buttons and knobs radio or you just keep using SDR.
Yeah, what I usually do on the 590 is I use the multi-slash channel knob with steps that, you know, whatever you want, like, I usually have, like, 1 kilohertz step, and then I leave the fake knob with a fine button engaged, so when I'm looking, I'll step with the multi-knob, and then if somebody's a little off the frequency, or maybe I am, I don't know, I'll tweak it with the large knob.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you have that dual capability. At this point, I have no buttons and knobs in HF radios, which is a little disturbing at times, but I'm getting good at it, so it's all right. I've been tempted to go get one of those funky SDR knob things that Power SDR likes to be integrated with, but we'll see. Just out of curiosity, which receive software do you use with your SDR?
Ah, man, I can't remember the name of it. I want to say it's called SDR Console.
Okay, so it's truly receive-only. It's one of the receive-only packages.
Roger.
Interesting. Alrighty. Well, look, I think I'm going to skedaddle. Go find out what the rest of my family is doing tonight. And go from there. My wife has to work most of tomorrow, so tomorrow is play radio day, which I don't get normally to do, and maybe make a little more room in my ham shack out of some of the abundant clutter that's here. Anyway, hope you have a good night, and thank you for coming in tonight. It's been fun. KD2GNY W2TTT.
All right, well, thanks for having me. Sorry for appearing to be late there, but I was actually waiting for a thunderstorm to pass, and my generator to get all set up, and I had my portable in my hand, and I was the one that, like, I can't hear you, you're coming in too quiet. It's because I was running around, like, underneath my garage, pretty much with a Baofeng in my hand, trying to say, hey, I'm here, while trying to start the generator. But once I got that cranking, it actually looks like we got power back, so I got to run outside and turn it off and crank up the mains again. But it worked out pretty well. And thanks for having me.
Well, we've got a good group of guys here. A lot of guys were missing tonight, but I think we were about 20 of us, so it's a nice group. And as you can tell, there's some really good good things. All right, 7-3 and take care. KD2TNY W2TTT. I may be mobile if my son needs a ride. He's coming up from Arlington with his girlfriend, but I don't know if he's coming here to a friend's house. So it gets interesting. I'll be either here on 442 in a little bit. W2TTT. Stay safe. Be careful of that generator.
Hi, thank you. KD2GNY clear.
CIA Mobile.
To CWW.
KD2BOR.
What's up, guys? How's it going? Happy 4th of July. Hope everybody's up and going to have a good time. Over to you, Rock.
Chris should have got it, but good morning, Steve. Good morning, Chris. Everything's okay. Just got here playing around on the computer. Over to you, Chris.
Yeah, hopefully everybody is off, you know. I know I got 4 days off. I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but maybe I'll hook up the 6-meter portion of the antenna to my ICOM 7000 and play around with it. Sorry about that, Chris. I was talking, I forgot who signed first. I have four days off also, so and I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Well, I bought a new weed whacker, so I'm going to try that out tomorrow in between the rain. And I got everything I need to hook the ICOM 7000 up for the 6-meter portion of this antenna.
Excellent. Hopefully you guys didn't have too much trouble with the rain. It was terrible in the city, man. It was like a monsoon a couple of times, and then it would fizzle out and then come right back. It was really crazy weather. So I should have left the car out in the open. It was actually under the trestle. It would have cleaned this thing up. This thing's a mess. Look at the hail over here. I told the wife, I said, go underneath the overpass, get that thing out of the hail. But then as fast as she was ready to run outside, it stopped. Rocky, thanks again. You're a man of your word. And I got it. So thank you very much.
No problem, Steve. I just sent you an email. I just read your... I just sent you a text. I just got your text when I woke up before. I had a real tough day yesterday. Everybody wanted everything before the long weekend. I got one guy's car and I left for two tires. Told him he wasn't getting it back till Monday, but he don't care.
Yep. I don't know why, but I always found that to be true. Like a lot of people do stuff with their cars. I guess the 4th of July really kind of sticks in your mind as a summer thing. And summertime, everybody wants their cars up and running good. So in the winter, nobody wants to take a chance of being without it. So I guess you find that to be true, Rob.
See if I have it. I had a girl call me, 82 BOR Friday. I had a girl call me at 10:30 yesterday morning. She wanted all her tires balanced and everything. I said, you got some case. I said, how long do you know you had this problem? Oh, for about 2 months. I said, I can't do it.
That spot recommends what it was. You said all four something.
That girl called at 10:30 yesterday morning, wanted all four of her tires balanced. I said, what's wrong? She goes, it's shaking when I go over pumps. I said, let me guess, you own a Jeep. I said, call me on Monday, we'll set up an appointment so I can look at the front end. I said, there's no way I can do it before the long weekend.
Death wobble.
That's what I told her, Chris. I said, I'm going to have to look at your front end. I said, nothing against your truck. But when she said it shakes, and then she said when she hits a bump, it shakes bad. That's what I said to her. Do you own a Jeep by any chance?
You haven't lived until you're doing 50 miles an hour on the highway and you get death wobble. Oh, it's better than any ride at the amusement park.
As long as I've been around, Chris, I've seen it many times. Let's see if Steve's in a better spot. Over to you, Steve.
Well, I hope so. I'm in the driveway, so hopefully I'm making it. I had a 2002 Jeep Liberty. It was the first year, the first model. And I loved the Jeep, man. I had a lot of fun with it, but it had a lot of problems. It was a very unstable car.
Yeah, if anybody knows about Jeeps, Chris does.
I have had my share. Well, I'll tell you, man, that thing took a beating. I had all four tires off the ground a few times. Even did a couple of races with it. It was pretty good. We're coming back from Boston one time. It was like terrible rain like today. And the highway was flooding. And I go to change lanes, and the Jeep just went sideways. And there was nothing I could do to get out of it, and we slammed into a concrete barrier. I'm going to say we're probably doing about 45, maybe 35, 45. The Jeep just went sideways and hydroplaned and right into the concrete barrier. And all it did was scrape up the fenders, and I got a big tumor on the front tire. But everything else was all right.
You're very lucky.
Actually, I've been looking at the Liberties, a later model.
is a company that makes a new hub assembly that'll give you a 2-inch lift without having to change any the geometry of it.
Watch those shows on TVs that Extreme 4x4. Some of the stuff they got for trucks is amazing, but Jeep seem to be the king of what the manufacturers are making.
I tell you, the one thing I liked for it, and right before we got rid of it, I almost ordered it. They had a plate that went over the spare tire in the back, and you mount your antenna to it. It went right over the lugs that that hold on the spare tire. I don't know what the heck you call those things, the little stems. The plate went over the spare tire, and then you could mount your antennas on there. The only problem with it was, if you have something mounted there, you can't open the back window.
They call them wheel studs and wheel nuts back there. That's probably what you're talking about, Steve.
Yep, it eluded me.
That's why I always drill right to the roof.
Out my truck for over 4 years, and I haven't had the heart to drill through it yet.
I had a Dodge Intrepid RT. I had it for 3 weeks. I had a hole drilled in the roof for a stubby antenna.
In my 11 beer days, I always drilled the old junks that I had to put ball mounts on them, or I even had a ball mount in the middle of my roof one time.
Yeah, I've always been messing around with these mag mounts or the lip mounts. And with the mag mounts, especially in the van, I got to be careful because it'll screw up the compass if it's too far forward, the little computer in the ceiling. And then if it's in the middle, it screw up the DVD player. So I got to be careful where I put it.
That's what she said.
KB2 TIA. All right, guys, I'm going to go inside. I'm not sure if I'll be back out. I've been losing my voice here. I don't know if you hear it. I'm going, I've been losing my voice all day. I think it's allergies. So, good talking with both of you. And hope to catch you guys over the weekend. Have lots of fun. KB2 TIA Mobile.
73, have fun.
Have a good night.
Thinking about selling that Ranger radio I got, Chris.
I still got to figure out if I can get up to the Sussex County. I don't know what weekend duty I'm on. And then the guy at work had 4 accidents within a year, so I just had to pull all of his overtime. He's not allowed to drive anything. I revoked his weekend duty, so now I got to make up those days. You know, hopefully the other guys will grab him. What a mess. I actually had to do an online defensive driving course at the insurance company.
Wow. I guess that guy's not too happy with you, huh?
I told him, I said, look, I could suspend you for 3 days or just you're not going to drive the vehicles until further notice. He's like, if I get suspended, can I drive again right over there? No, you're not going to drive. I'm just thinking that I'm going to suspend you. So, 2 of the accidents were not his fault, but the last one, he, you know, made a turn and backed into a car.
I think he would have learned his lesson by now and be a little bit more careful.
Well, the last one was during a snowstorm. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and he came flying down the street and turned into our DPW area, and he cobalted a cobalt with the plow. He T-boned it, and, I gotta say, I don't know why the fireman was sitting there at the light with no lights on, but still.
sounds like this guy just drives too fast. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, it's on a Yahoo group. They make upgraded front yoke assemblies for the Liberty, which is the main problem. You know, their front ends are horrible. But in doing so, it also does a 2-inch extension. So what you do is put new rear spring rate. Front, you use the stock spring assembly, and you get a 2-inch lift on a Liberty.
KD2BOR, I think that would look sharp on a Liberty, because they are kind of low to the ground, you know, for what they are. They're not a bad little truck, I told you. I just got done working on one for one of my customers with the axle seals and stuff. Very easy truck to work on.
Yeah, a guy up the street, actually, he's selling an 88, and it's only got 53,000 miles on it.
I didn't even know they made Liberties back then. Most of my customers got Grand Cherokees or the square box ones. What motor did they use back in 88? The still this 3.7?
Yeah, it's got the 3.7 in it.
I know they had a few issues with that motor, but I don't know if they've cleared it up. I know they had fire problems. There was some type of recall on those things. They had, I forget, it was something with the alternator cable, or I could be wrong on that, but there's a few of them burn up.
Yeah, the, what do they call it? The battery whip terminal wire, the one that went from the battery down to the starter, wasn't insulated enough, and it would rub and arc out against the body.
Had to do with some cable. I never had a customer to experience that problem, but my buddy down the street had one of his customers that the truck burned up. I think I'm gonna invest. If I get enough money out of this stuff, I got to sell. Thinking about getting an 857.
Great radio. And if you get it, I have the cable, the program cable, so you don't have to get that. You can always borrow mine.
Yeah, I got a brain like a sieve. I got my 69 FFB4 all boxed up again. Radio's only got about 2 hours on it. I bought that MC-100 or whatever, MC-60A. I don't have anything to use that on. I could use it on the Alenco, but I like that mic I bought from ENY. And I got a few other things. Girlfriend said if I could turn that radio over and turn a few things over, and I could come up with the money, I can get the 857. Question, Chris, that's right, I wanted to ask you. What tuner are you using in your vehicle with the 857?
I have the YT100, the ADG, the LDG.
How does that work? Does it work well? It's completely automatic?
82CWW. It's semi-automatic. I had to run a terminal. I had to run a momentary switch up to my dash. And, you know, to make it go into an auto-tune.
KD2BOR. Yeah, I was telling the girlfriend, I saw an 857 on eBay the other day. I mean, it was really pretty. It was really clean. They only bid it up to $587 and it sold, but I made a decision after the Alenco that I had to spend more money on than what I paid for it, totally, with buying it and getting it fixed. I said, my career with used equipment is over, I think.
Well, I was originally, you know, when I first licensed, I was originally looking at the ICOM 706. I was following one on eBay, putting bids in on it, and I said to myself I wasn't going to spend over $650. And I was sitting at the dining room table, and it went to $675, and I said to my wife, that's it. I'm not getting that radio. So she's like, what are you talking about? I said, I've been bidding on an older radio, yada, yada. She's like, well, what does it do? And I told her, you know, 10 through 6, 2 meter, 220, 44, you know, not 220, but 2 meter, 6 meter, and 440, and it's a multi-mode. So she's like, oh, you can go.